Welcome, everyone, to Real Career Talk. I'm your host, Phil Friquette. And this is a monthly podcast being brought to you by the network where we will spend an hour each month sharing a cup of coffee, talking to experts about career hot topics, including talent development, pillars for 2020, emotional intelligence, education, skills development, and even networking. Today, we are having our discussion with Chloe Lamel, as well as Anthony Lewis. Chloe Lamel is Director of Compliance here at AT&T. Anthony Lewis is our Vice President of Value Portfolio. Good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon, Phil.
Good afternoon.
All right. So I'm excited. I hope that you all are excited. I'm very interested on what you have to share, and I believe our audience is looking forward to it as well. But before I get started, one of the things I love to do is set the tone. It's very informal. Let's have some fun, but also let's provide some information that will be powerful for our audience. And let's do that over our favorite beverage. Mine is a cup of coffee from Starbucks. And I'm very interested in what you all might be drinking, what your favorite, sharing a cup of coffee. Well, you know, it's afternoon, so let's talk about that. What's your favorite cup of coffee there, Chloe?
So it's afternoon and I'm at work, so I'm downing some H2O right now, trying to stay hydrated in this cold and flu season. However, if it were after hours, you would catch me sipping on a glass of red Zinfandel. It's my drink of choice.
Very nice. Very nice. Zinfandel. Yes. Yes. All right. So water is good. Always good for us. Yes. And Anthony, how about you?
I think this afternoon, Chloe and I are together. I'm drinking water now, which is what I usually drink in the afternoon. Now, if you catch me in the morning, first thing in the morning, it's usually a glass of cranberry juice, which is one of my favorite things to drink in the morning. And that's really about it. The evening, I don't drink soft drinks, so it's usually water, cranberry juice, or a little bit of orange juice every now and then.
All right. That's that cranberry juice is excellent for the soul. How about that?
That's good. That sounds good.
All right, let's start out with our first question. So I want to start out with Chloe. How would you, actually for the both of you, actually, the first question that we have on task is, how would you define emotional intelligence? Chloe, let's start with you.
Sure. And I love this topic, and I'm delighted to be here with everyone today. And as most people do when they want to know something, they look it up and they turn to our friend Google to find out what the definition is. And Google's definition of emotional intelligence is the capacity to be aware of, control, and express one's emotions and to handle interpersonal relationships judiciously and empathetically. Now, I tend to be of the opinion that defining a 9 is best. I've heard that in our tech dev group where they define a 9. And so if I was endeavoring to do that and define a 9, what emotional intelligence is, I would say ability to identify and manage our and others' emotions. That's exactly 9 words. Ability to identify and manage our and others' emotions.
Mm-hmm. Manage our and others' emotions. So let me just ask you, based on that answer, what are some tips that you have for managing your own emotions before we even talk about others? Yes, let's talk about your own emotions first.
Sure. There's an aphorism that's know thyself. And I think it's so important for everyone, myself included, to just be aware of your own inner state, how you feel about things, what your likes and dislikes are, and what your reactions are. So that's the first step, is really understanding yourself, kind of pausing and reflecting and just thinking about it. So often we're so busy moving from task to task, trying to put out fires, some of us, dealing with balancing work and home life and family and kids and pets and friends and social activities and all these things that we don't really take the time to step back and think about ourselves and our feelings. Mm-hmm. And so that's what it's all about to me, is knowing what you feel in a given moment, being very mindful of where you are, meditating even. Those are some tips on how to get to know yourself a bit better.
I love that, starting out talking about knowing yourself, especially when it comes to emotional intelligence, knowing how you respond under normal circumstances as well as under conflict. We all act a certain kind of way until mm-hmm. you add conflict to the matter, right? And then there might be a different, there might be a different film that might be in the room when there is conflict, right? And, the first things first is that I need to know that as well. I love that. Anthony, what would you like to share in regards to the meaning of emotional intelligence to you?
Well, Phil, I think that Chloe did an outstanding job of defining emotional intelligence. So there's not a lot to add to the definition. But one thing I would say about emotional intelligence from my perspective is certainly knowing your own emotions and knowing how you react in certain situations. So in some cases, it's more of thinking about situations and how you normally react, and then determining, is that the kind of reaction you want to actually put forward? So if you think about, how do I react in stressful situations? Or how do I react when I'm being challenged on whether it's a work issue or a personal issue, or how do I handle praise when someone tells me I've done an outstanding job or really putting a lot of accolades on me? How do I react to that emotionally? So it's knowing how you react in situations where you're up and situations where you're down. And when you know how you react, then you can evaluate, am I doing the right kind of thing? Am I really reacting emotionally the right way in those situations in order to reach the goal or complete the task that's at hand?
Mm-hmm. I love that, when you're talking about knowing how I might react in conflict, knowing how I might respond. When you think about our communication styles, we all have patterns that are shown consistently over time. Am I that expressive one? Am I that driver that's looking to get things done? Am I that analytical who needs data before I take a move or before I take any type of action? We all can probably identify where we are in regards to those communication styles that show constantly in everyday work. Now, with that said, when you add conflict to it, does it change my focus? Does it change my response? And really, what am I looking to get out of that moment, out of that time that's really attributing to the results? That's an excellent, that's going to help the results as well. So thank you with that, Anthony. So I want to ask you, Chloe mentioned about how, when you're talking about emotional intelligence, not just how I manage my own emotions, but how I also manage others. So Chloe, elaborate on that a little bit. Tell me more about that.
Sure. So the others piece is first and foremost about empathy. So tuning into other people's emotions, putting yourself in other people's shoes, really trying to understand how someone else might feel in a given moment, which may or may not be similar to how you feel. And then the second piece after that other awareness is really about dedicating time and energy to nurturing those relationships with other people. So how oriented toward other people are you? Do you invest time and energy not only in empathizing and putting yourself in someone else's shoes, but also building a strong relationship with other people? And all of that factors into emotional intelligence.
excellent when I hearing you talking about empathy, that can go a long way. Understanding self-awareness, how we're coming across, how it might be responding, also plays a role into that as well, into that outcome for that discussion. Anthony, you want to add anything to that?
Well, I think one of the important things, and Chloe touched on this, is as you have empathy or you understand how other people might react in a certain situation, if you're dealing with people that you know, or that you are in your environment on a regular basis, then you have some clue as to how they might react to a certain situation, or whether it's a stressful situation, or whether it's a situation where there's some excitement or something that's going really well, in understanding how they react and how you can help them emotionally to get to the right place, maybe if they normally don't get to the right place. So understanding that is I think it's really key. I mean, every environment that we're in, there are a lot of things that are floating around in environments, and we can get sometimes emotionally entangled in the things that other folks are doing or saying, but understanding how to react to what someone else does, and how to sometimes calm the situation when you react to what someone else might do emotionally, can help you get through emotionally charged environments or situations that you have to deal with. And so that empathy that Chloe talked about is, I think, critically important in dealing with situations or issues with people that you work with or people that you are engaged with on a personal level as well.
Anthony, I want to ask you in regards to that. How does a person deal with emotional moments? What can you do? I teach crucial conversations. What I find interesting is when people say, well, you got to remove the emotion. If someone tells you, you got to remove the emotion out of the discussion, is that really possible? And that's really geared towards Anthony. What do you think?
Well, I think from my perspective, Phil, I don't think it's possible to remove emotion from any situation, because we're all emotional beings, right? We emotions are just how we deal with and how we react to whatever's happening in whatever environment we're in. So removing emotion, I think, isn't the goal, because there's not a way to, I think, successfully do that. I think dealing with the emotions is really what we have to learn to do. And it is a learned kind of skill, right? It's not something that we're born with. It's something that we learn. And as you learn how to deal with emotional situations, how to, in some cases, de-escalate a situation, and to keep everyone sort of thinking about what's the outcome we're trying to get to, that helps us to, you know, if we have a common goal and it's an emotionally charged situation, then trying to get focus on the goal again helps us to get emotionally stable so that we can get to the goal we're trying to accomplish. That's whether you're at work or whether you're at home. I think as we think about achieving goals, it's all about working with people in the environments we're in and dealing with the emotions that are in those environments. So it's not a matter of eliminating them. It's dealing with emotions.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Thank you. Anthony, Chloe, you want to add anything to that? How do you deal with emotions?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I loved what Anthony said about it being a learned thing, that you're not just innately born with it. And one of my favorite words of all time is intentional. And that's the point that he was driving. You have to be really intentional about how you approach and interact with people and feelings. And I completely 100% agree that you can't remove emotions from a situation. You just have to learn how to manage them effectively. and not let them be triggers for certain maladaptive behaviors. And so I think that focus on intentionality and doing things with purpose and being mindful is the key.
I received that. Thank you, Chloe. So the next couple of questions really are directed at you, Chloe. So as a director of ethical culture here in our compliance organization, would you first define what is or what having ethical behavior actually means? And then tell us if you think there's a connection between ethical behaviors and what we've been talking about, which is emotional intelligence.
Of course. And it's a great question. I get asked that a lot. What does this ethical culture role mean from people at AT&T and outside of AT&T? And just as a little bit of background, it's actually a newer position. So I was the first occupant of this role, and I was appointed back in August of 2016. So about 3.5 years ago, a little over that, by David Huntley. And his vision was to have somebody who had a background in human behavior and in psychology, really focusing in on what does ethical behavior even mean? So I set that stage to define what it means. I turned to our values, so AT&T's values. And many of you may have seen these and are familiar with them, but ethical behavior to me simply means to live true, to do the right thing, no compromise. But it's personal, though, and we're all in this, each and every one of us. And I like to say the key ingredient in the recipe for a strong ethical culture is you, is me, is us, is each and every one of us. And ethical behavior is something that must be demonstrated constantly, even when no one is watching. So David Huntley, who's our chief compliance officer, likes to say that your integrity is only as good as the last time it was tested. And I couldn't agree more with that. People like to make claims about their own integrity, but they really don't know what they would do when their backs are up against a wall or their feet are to the fire. Phil, you mentioned this at the outset, when they're in conflict, you may do something completely different when you're in a hot state versus when you're in a cold state. Mm-hmm. And so to get back to your second question, which is about the connection to emotional intelligence, I absolutely believe there is a connection between the two. And the research supports this as well. And the net of the research is that the more skilled a person is in dealing with his or her emotions, the more likely that person is to make more ethical decisions. And in fact, my team is conducting a study right now to try to empirically link those two concepts, ethical behavior and emotional intelligence. And my team believes, and we're hypothesizing, that those higher in emotional intelligence are also more likely to exhibit strong ethical behavior.
When you consider ethical behaviors, would you agree that lack of emotional intelligence and actually impact ethical behavior?
Absolutely. I certainly believe that reverse is true. If you aren't attuned to your own feelings, aren't able to manage your own feelings and reactions, if you're not attuned to others and can't empathize and aren't building the right relationships and managing those relationships effectively, I definitely think that can negatively impact your ability to do the right thing.
Mm-hmm. So what is the biggest driving force for someone to exhibit ethical behavior? And finally, how does one develop and even reinforce it?
I always say the first step is awareness. Awareness is where you have to start. You can't just take ethical behavior for granted or just assume that it exists, that I'm an ethical person, so I don't need to do anything about it. That's not the case. It's something that each and every one of us, myself included, must actively work on. Again, my favorite word, intentional. We have to be intentional. And much like you can develop emotional intelligence, you can also develop ethical behavior. But again, you have to be intentional. And there are a number of different things that folks can do to develop and reinforce it. just listening to this podcast, for instance, is helping to bring ethical behavior to the forefront of your mind, to your brain. So it's priming you already to think ethically and think and reflect on your own behavior. So that's one thing about raising awareness. There are a number of resources. Our Code of Business Conduct website has a lot of resources there. It's a place that you can visit more than once a year for your annual training. My team is constantly adding new resources and videos to enhance the content on that site. So it's something I'd recommend folks bookmark and go to. We also have an Ethics at Work app that launched September of last year, and it was auto pushed to most company issued devices. But if folks want more information about those resources or workshops or other things that my team can do and share, we're more than happy to provide that.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Thank you so much. Anthony, I want to shift gears and talk to you. So how we were discussing emotional intelligence, and I want to find out from you, how important is emotional intelligence to career success and even to career advancement?
Phil, I think that's a great question, because when I think about emotional intelligence and I look back at my own career and I look at others that I know, I value emotional intelligence probably as much as technical skills or industry knowledge. Because if you think about what it takes to find success, in a lot of cases, it's you have to be competent. You have to have the technical skills you need. You have to have knowledge. But you also have to connect, in some cases, very, you know, emotionally with people that you work with. And it's important for us to understand and realize that emotional intelligence is a key to making those connections with people that we interact with, that we network with every day. You know, when we talked about emotional intelligence being us sort of understanding our own emotions and how we are, how we present ourselves emotionally to others, and also understanding the emotions of the folks that we are interacting with and how we can impact them and help them to get to a place where, you know, together you can work with someone and you can make that kind of connection that gives them a perspective on you that they like. I mean, one of the things I always tell people that I work with and that are part of my team is that, you know, when you have a leader that's looking for someone to be on their team, one of the things that, you know, people look for is it someone that I can work with and get along with. So you may be the most competent person, but if emotionally it's difficult for folks to deal with you, then it's probably less likely that you're going to get opportunities. And so just being aware of who you are, how you react in circumstances, and then determining how you can make improvements around your own emotions and how you present those emotions to people that you work with and people that you interact with, I think is critically important as you look at finding career success and future opportunities.
Mm-hmm. I believe to your point you just stated, Anthony, it's very important and it's critical. When you think about our own model of leadership, which is the extraordinary leadership model, you think about interpersonal skills, that tenet for interpersonal skills. This is where you're alluding to as far as building, being able to build relationship. But in order to do that, you got to first understand where you are when it comes to communication and some of the things that you shared. I love that answer, actually. Chloe, do you want to add? I know that this is off, I'm kind of throwing you off here. I don't mean to put you on the spot. Do you want to add on to that? How important is it, emotional intelligence, to career success and career advancement from your point of view?
Yeah, I'll just add to what Anthony said by mentioning some research on the topic. There's been a connection between the two, emotional intelligence and career success, in many cases. And so there have been studies of studies, which we psychologists like to call meta-analyses, that look at this connection. And it does show that people who invest this time and energy in growing themselves and understanding their emotional states and the emotional states of others tend to be more successful in the long run. They are better leaders. They are better able to produce results. They're better able to collaborate with other people to produce results. And they're more understanding just because of that empathy. And so I definitely think there's a strong connection between career success and emotional intelligence.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. Anthony, going back to our discussion about emotion, I just want to ask you all, we've been talking about emotional intelligence, understanding our awareness and, understanding self-awareness, and then also being able to manage, as Chloe was discussing earlier, not just our own emotions, being able to also being able to manage others as well, emotions. So I want to ask both of you this question. What are some ways that we can influence other behaviors in the workplace? What are some things that we can do specifically? We were talking about, what is it that I need to get the most out of this moment, out of this discussion, especially if it's emotion filled conflict, conflict that's impacting our interaction. What are some of the things that we can do to influence other behaviors? And let's start with you, Anne.
Sure. One of the first things that I always think about in any kind of emotional situation that I'm engaged in is the fact that people that you're interacting with in most cases will reflect what you put forward. So, for example, if we're in a situation that's stressful, and if I display anger and frustration in the way that I interact with you, then in a lot of cases, you're going to reflect that back to me. If I stay calm and explain the situation, the facts, and what we're trying to accomplish in a less emotional fashion, then in a lot of cases, that might de-escalate some of the emotions that the other person might have. And so trying to, the one thing that I know I can do in this situation is I can control and put forward the emotions that I want to put forward myself. And in some cases, that can help influence the emotions that the other person might have. So it's really a matter, I think, of looking at the situation and trying to find ways to, if you're trying to bring the temperature in the room down, don't add to the heating of the conversation. Try to subtract from it. And that, in a lot of cases, will give you an opportunity to get the conversation and the emotions moving in the right direction.
One of the things that comes to mind, if I want a honest or a transparent conversation, there's the old parable, I have to first show myself to be honest and transparent. If I want a calm, a discussion where we're looking to progress and move forward, it's all about reciprocity. Hopefully, if I give that, it should come back in the same manner. We hope, right? So, Anthony, I have another question for you. How have you been able, and just by listening to the way you're communicating on the call, you seem to be a cool guy, very relaxed and laid back, right, Anthony?
I would say so.
You would say so. All right. I receive that. So how have you been able to stay calm, cool, and collected over your years, I know you've been sharing some great insights in regards to what we can do in the moment. Just overall, what have you done to stay calm, cool, and collected over your career?
Well, I think one of the keys for me has always been to respect people that I'm interacting with. In some cases, even if they may not be showing respect to me, to absorbing some of the things that people bring to you and trying to deal with that in a way that doesn't escalate a situation, or just trying to explain a situation that someone might have a misunderstanding about. I've had many situations over the years where I might have had someone say something to me that may not have been completely, their understanding may not have been completely true or correct. And dealing with that in a, calm way and giving back to them what I would say are facts, and working through those facts with someone helps them to get to that situation. Now, I had to give you an example of many years ago. I was CFO supporting one of our business units, and the gentleman that was the president of that organization didn't like a budget adjustment that I presented to him, and he called me and was very upset and irate. And my response to him was simply that I would be glad to talk to you about this situation if you'd like to calm down and have a conversation. But I won't stay on the phone if you continue to yell at me. Now, he calmed down. We had a conversation. We dealt with the issue. And at the end of the call, he said, "Hey, we're still friends, aren't we?" I said, "Well, sure. No problem." So just dealing with situations like that, without letting my own negative emotions spill over into the conversation has helped me to deal with those kinds of situations, and has helped me to get people that may not have been in a happy place when we started the conversation to try to get them to that place that is at least something that we can deal with. They may not walk away happy, but we can deal with the outcome.
Mm-hmm. I love that answer. Anthony, when you think about what you just stated, I want to add, I want to get Chloe's take on that, actually. And then I'm going to come back to something you said, because when you're thinking about emotional intelligence and understanding where you are, how you respond, how you act in these moments, there's some intangibles that can come in. There's some variables that can come in that might not make it as simple as it seems. But first, before I do that, Chloe, anything you want to add on to that? How do you stay calm? Cool. Chloe, you seem to be kind of cool as a cucumber as well. I'm just saying, So how do you stay as calm and as cool and collected as you can over your years, over your career? Some tidbits from you.
Yeah, no, happy to provide. And one of the things that I've worked on with my team over the years, we have these intentional practices. There it goes again, my favorite word. And one of them is about listening to understand. It gets at what Anthony was just talking about. And it's empathy. But one thing people misunderstand about empathy is it's not about agreeing with somebody. It's just listening to understand their perspective and their point of view, putting yourself in their shoes. And so often we talk past one another, or we're listening to speak instead of really listening to understand. And so that's one thing that's helped me tremendously stay calm and collected and focused, but then also influence when I can understand where someone is coming from I can better speak in a language that they will hear. Another one that we've done, it's called, the intentional practice was called Aim to Be Kind All the Time. And this one is near and dear to my heart. And I was just reading an article about kindness the other day. And it might sound fluffy to say be kind, but it's on the decline. And I'm sure people have felt it, seen it, maybe witnessed it or experienced it themselves in today's polarized culture. But kindness has actually been on the decline for quite some time. And I'm a parent of two young kids. I have a 1.5-year-old and a 4-year-old. And so I'm always looking for people's advice or advice on parenting. And I read this article today in The Atlantic, and it's about teaching your kids kindness. And as parents, we tend to say we want our kids to be kind, but what we ask about is what they've done, their accolades, their test scores, how they've achieved success. And that tends to be our focus. And this article is imploring parents to say, what have you done to help someone today? What have you done to be kind to your friend, your classmate, your coworker, your colleague? And I thought it was so important. It was a powerful article that I read, but that's another intentional practice that if you are just kind to one another and empathize, again, put yourself in their shoes and just remain kind, that's a way to remain calm and de-escalate your own emotions and feelings. And it can be contagious. There are a lot of studies that have shown that kindness spreads. And being that kind of beacon of light and really listening to understand, those have been two really good tips that I've worked on with my team and with myself.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. We are in an era where we, as I often say with our leaders across the enterprise, that we are in an era where we listen to respond more so than listen to understand. And I'm glad you stated that. I want to ask you, Anthony, in regards to those moments where you are in a tense scenario, to our audience out here, you might have a moment where you are dealing with someone that's of influence, and you want to make sure, and it's intense and might get conflict filled in a moment. How do you get the most out of that discussion when you're dealing with a person that's higher up? So you have some people out here that's probably very interested. They want to share their view. They want to share their opinion, but they also don't want to lose that relationship with that person that might be talking down, to the point that you stated, talking down to them, condescending, maybe using even profanity, shall I say. What would you say to that individual out there that's looking to get the most out of that moment, but they have that person of higher authority and you know, they have that intangible? I'm interested in your thought on that.
Well, Bill, I think one of the important things when you're interacting with, let's say, someone that, as you described, a higher authority, and it depends on the situation, right? But if you think about what most people that are leaders in the business are looking for are folks that they work with that do have an opinion about whatever it is they're working on. So even though someone might approach you with, let's say, a higher level with their own view and their opinion about a situation, and they may be very forceful in the way that they deliver that opinion, I think it's still important to make sure that you present your point of view in that situation. Because the thing that you don't want to do is just sit quietly and not offer anything to the conversation. Now, it doesn't mean that you've got to argue about the situation, but if someone comes to me and this happens, you know, and certainly frequently in some cases, where they might have a point of view about a, whether it's a project or a situation or an issue, and they say, well, this is what we need to do. And even if they believe that, let's say, they think that my approach was not correct, just as an example, then I think it's important for all of us to be confident in the decisions that we're making or the things that we're doing, to just present, well, here are the reasons why maybe I've done things the way that I have. But then, as Chloe just said, I think the key is then to also listen, to try to understand what the point of view is that you're getting back from that person. Now, if I, in that situation, believe that what I was doing was appropriate, then I'll certainly explain that situation and the reasoning. Now, what I might find in the conversation is, well, maybe I could have made a mistake, let's say, in the way that I approached it. And if I did, then it's very important to own up to any mistakes that you've made very quickly. And then also to, you know, be willing to offer a way to remedy or rectify whatever the situation might be in the conversation, if that is the kind of conversation that you're having. But to get back to, I think the first point is, we should all be willing to offer our views and the reasoning behind our views, to anyone that we're talking to that may be a higher level of leadership or where, whatever position they might be in. Because after all, my point of view is that's what we get paid to do, is to help make decisions, to offer our points of view and our beliefs about a situation. And if that is rejected because of whatever, that's where the listening to understand comes in, because of whatever the reasons might be, then I can accept that. But I've given my view, my opinion, and I'm also willing to be flexible to say, okay, I understand why you might have a different point of view, different opinion, and let's move on together then down the path that we want to go down at that point. So you have to really listen and understand what's happening and why the situation is occurring, and then react in that situation without showing negative emotions necessarily, but really it's more understanding, controlling my own emotions and understanding what I'm getting from the person that I'm having the conversation with. Now that's kind of a long, a little bit convoluted answer, but that's kind of the view that I would have in interacting with someone in that kind of situation is don't be afraid to stand behind whatever it is you are presenting, but then be flexible enough to understand what you're getting back from the person you're having the conversation with.
Mm-hmm. Powerful words. I appreciate that. Anthony, as we come to my last question, and it's really for both of you, starting with Chloe, one of our pillars that we have here for 2020 is networking. We've been talking about emotional intelligence over the last few moments and how emotional intelligence actually impacts our interaction. Tell us more about that, especially when it comes to maintaining relationships in networking. I want to start with you, Chloe, on that, if you don't mind.
Sure. And that's so important. And it's something that we have to make time for and be again intentional about, is networking and building those relationships and nurturing the relationships we already have. In terms of nurturing them, you hear these statements about, you know, determining what are your big rocks and what are your marbles and sand and what are your biggest priorities is the net of it. And what are those big rock relationships that you want to maintain that bring you value, but that you also contribute value to? And so identifying who those are so you can nurture the relationships that are most important, really setting aside time for each of those entities to make sure that you dedicate to them on a regular basis. And then building other relationships. On that note, one thing I really like that I learned about through AT&T is a program called Dine. Many of you may have heard about that. Phil, you may have heard of Anthony. You may have even participated in these before. But it's really in diversity and inclusion initiative to invite people who are different than you to lunch and discover differences, include one another, network, navigate new experiences, and eat. And it's an acronym. And I've found such value in these dine experiences because I get to know other people and I get to grow my network through that and grow my diverse network through that experience and really listen and hear from other people what their experiences have been like that may or may not be similar to mine, share my experience. And it's really an exercise in listening to understand because you're with different people and listening to each other's stories and growing as a result of it. So those would be my two recommendations with nurturing the relationships you already have, identifying what those key relationships are and making time for them intentionally every week, and then building new relationships that are outside of your current network and that are more diverse and inclusive.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask one more question on something you said, Chloe. You talked about finding someone that's different from you. Is there any pattern that you utilize? We understand diversity, a point of place where people or things differ, but is there something, are we talking about from a communication style? Are we talking about from a business style? Is it, just to clarify for the audience, find someone that's different from you, please. Mm-hmm.
All of the above. They can look different from you. They can be educated differently. They can live in a different country than you even. I would just encourage people to get to know people outside of your own bubble. Maybe they're of differing beliefs. Maybe they are of a different gender, whatever it is. Finding that person who has a different experience than you, it can be uncomfortable sometimes because we have a bubble for a reason, because we like having certain things reinforced. And as human beings, we like being around people we like and that are like us. And so it's a challenge to push yourself outside of your comfort zone and be around somebody who's of a different ethnic background, or around somebody who might be of a different socioeconomic status, or around somebody who might speak a different language than you do. But there's still ways that you can communicate, and there's still common ground that if you aim for it, you can find with just about anybody. And so if you're listening to understand, if you're being kind, if you're doing these things as you approach other people, and most importantly, if you're being open to it, that's the key. That's how you can really expand your network, is through that openness.
Love that. Excellent words. Thank you, Chloe. Anthony, do you want to add on to that?
Well, Chloe did an excellent job with that. And I've learned a lot from Chloe today. So I'm glad that I'm participating in this conversation, because I'm learning, and I know that a lot of other folks will learn from this as well. But I certainly am with everything that she said there. I would certainly agree with, you know, one thing that I think about in networking, maintaining networks and expanding networks is as you build your network, or as you, let me start with, say, those folks that are in your network today, connecting at an emotional level is, I think, very important for most of us, because we like for people to, one, ask questions about me. Like, if you're interested in me, then I generally like people to ask me questions about myself and to show interest in me. I think we all have that kind of feeling, right? It's so connecting at that emotional level where I want to understand more about you. It may be your business background. It may be where you grew up. might be you have kids, what you like to do. And as we talk about those things, really understanding at that level of emotion, how connected you are with those things. And if we find some common ground, then that always helps to strengthen any connection emotionally, and our networks are stronger with people when we can find emotional levels that we can connect with folks on. It may be as simple as one, I know when your birthday is and your anniversaries, and just send you a note around those times. One of the things that I've shared with some of the folks that I've worked with and mentored in the past is, as you think about the people that you connect with and understanding and knowing different things about them, it's important to maintain those connections, even if they're not around and you don't see them every day. There are people that I've met over the years that every year on their birthday, I send them a note or a card just to let them know that I was thinking about them at that time. Or if they're celebrating an anniversary of some sorts, then just send them a note just to let them know I was thinking about them. So it may be someone that I met 15 years ago, and we were maybe engaged in doing something, working on something together, and I've maintained contact with them over the years. And it doesn't have to be every week, every month, every quarter. It may just be once a year that I let them know that I'm thinking about them. And so when you think about those kinds of things, it those are some of the kinds of things that I think we do to connect with people on an emotional level, which also helps us to maintain and grow our network. So as we meet new people, then we engage in conversations and ask them questions, just as they come up in conversations, not to be in a situation where someone feels like, they're on the witness stand being cross-examined. But it's really just in conversation as you talk to folks and you show some interest in them and learning more about them. But a key to all of that to me is it really has to be, you have to show genuine interest in people. People know if you're not genuine in what you're saying to them or how you're interacting with them. But if you have the capability and the ability to show people genuinely that you care about them and that you want to know more about them and you want to just learn about what they like, what they don't like, and those kinds of things. And I think that's helpful in maintaining growing networks as you go forward and keeping in touch with those people over the years. I think for me, it's been something that I really enjoy doing. And it's not just because I think they're going to be able to do something for me at some point. It's because I'm really interested in them and I like interacting with them. And that is the genuine part of it that I would say.
Showing value to them is critical. Anthony, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but my former director of 10 years ago, at least, actually calls me on my birthday and sings happy birthday. I'm just letting you know, I'm putting that out there, You might have to do some singing after this recording gets out.
Phil, let me say this. I have called and sang happy birthday to some folks before. So that is part of my repertoire. I'll say.
All right. That's powerful right there. All right. I want to thank you all. The information, I believe, will be powerful for our audience on setting the tone and setting the atmosphere for them and their path and their focus for 2020. What I'd like to do at the end of our session is give each one of our panelists, our guests, to share insights of their path, what they're doing, what they're focusing on, that might be hot and, new coming down the chute for 2020. And I want to give you both that opportunity as we wrap up our session here. Any final thoughts or words that you want to share about what you're doing, about you personally, to the audience, or just tidbits of value for them. Let's start with Chloe.
Yeah, you know, I'm still reeling off of yesterday's news, January 26th news about Kobe Bryant and his daughter Gianna and the seven other folks who perished in that helicopter in Calabasas, California. And it's just made it ever clear to me that it's life is fleeting and relationships are important. And so I think it is perfect timing for this conversation and what we were just ending by talking about, and what Anthony was mentioning about really making the time for people. It's so critically important. And so that's something for me that I'm really focusing in on 2020, that in addition to all the wonderful work that we're all doing at this company, just stepping outside of that for a minute and appreciating the lives that we have and the folks that are still in our lives.
Awesome, awesome words. Thank you, Chloe. Anthony, any final thoughts from you?
Sure. Just one important thing for me, and you know, I've been with the company for a long time, over 30 years, and as you get probably closer to the end of your career than you are to the beginning, it causes me to think about, from my perspective, how I can just add value to people that are in my life, people that are part of the environment that I work in, that I live in, and what can I do to help them to be better, or to add value to their lives, things that I can control. And so I look for opportunities to see what I can do to help someone who might be looking for a way to find improvement themselves. So that's a part of mentoring. So always engaged in doing that. And that's an important part of what I want to do and, you know, try to continue to do every day. But it's really just trying to add value. So whether it's through with people that I deal with, or whether it's just adding value in the job that I have, and trying to make sure that wherever I've been, that after I leave, things are better than when I got there. And so that's my goal, high level goal, as I look at 2020 and going forward.
Anthony, powerful words to end our session on today. What can I do to make where I am better after I'm gone? That is awesome. Chloe Lamel, Director of Compliance, Anthony Lewis, our Vice Presidents of Value Portfolios here at AT&T, I thank you. The networks, thank you for taking your time out. We'll see you all down the road at our next Real Career Talk. Great day.